the Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.
Hi, and welcome to the Business, Property and Wealth Creation Podcast. My name's Dan Latto, and today I've got a very special guest by the name of Nick Williams. Nick does franchising for businesses. So I've asked Nick to come on board on this podcast so that we can grill Nick about any questions that people may have about franchising. So welcome, Nick. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Pleasure to be talking with you, even though you're in sunny Spain and I'm in grey north.
Yeah, sorry about that. You know, the temperature is like 24, 25 degrees today.
That's enough.
Yeah, sorry about that. So, Nick, you deal with a lot of franchise businesses, and specifically, you help businesses become franchises?
That's it. We our company's been doing it since 81. Personally, since I've been doing it for the last 16 years, and it's a really interesting business space to be in. I'd had quite a mixed career before this. But the one thing about franchising that I really enjoy is you work with successful people who've got successful businesses or who've got ideas that can be turned into successful businesses. And you're always dealing with people who are buzzing and something new and innovative comes up from time to time, so that's always thrilling as well.
Fabulous. And what sort of businesses are good for franchising? So, for example, I used to own a lettings agency and we always considered franchising it. We actually opened up a number of offices and we had what I termed a mini franchise where we just went 50-50 on the income and it worked really well. But it wasn't like a proper franchise really. Although we could have done, and then we ended up selling the business anyway, mostly due to personal reasons, breakup of family and all sorts of different stuff. So we ended up just selling it anyway. But what sort of businesses makes a good franchise business?
That's a really wide question. So let's not say what sort of businesses, because we could talk about anything from food to domiciliary care to accountancy. And, of course, letting agencies. Yes, you should have done that, by the way. That's it's been a very successful sector for franchising.
Yeah.
Let's concentrate on the characteristics of a franchisable business. And the answer, and I do a lot of seminars for the banks, for the British Franchise Association, for our own company, talk about this stuff regularly. And I'm saying that just to emphasize that this is basic stuff, but it's the foundation of franchising. Firstly, the business needs to be a proven business. You cannot franchise an idea.
Yeah.
But hold on to that one, because I'm going to come back to what one can do with an idea in a minute or two.
Okay.
Number two, the business should be profitable at the operating level.
Yeah.
Now, going back to your letting agency, for example, it might be that at the individual office level, each of those was profitable, but that maybe you were investing heavily at the core of the business in IT, marketing, and stuff of that nature.
Yeah.
So that the business in the core was less profitable.
Yeah.
Now, what this means is a franchisor will have a business that makes money in the franchisee's hands, but it needs to make enough money for the franchisee to want to get involved in the first place.
Yeah.
And enough money to be able to stand the monthly management service fee that the franchisee will pay to the franchisor to be part of the franchise.
So it's interesting because that's actually one of the things I think puts off a lot of people who are considering buying a franchise. They get all the information, they check out the price, and then when they look at what the ongoing costs are that are going back to the franchise owner effectively, that sort of tends to put them off. But without those costs, the franchise model wouldn't work anyway.
Quite. Well, absolutely. And there's another element here to think about. Why does somebody want to become a franchisee as opposed to starting up their own business?
Mm.
And just to run through that fast, people who are truly entrepreneurial don't look to buy a franchise. They go out there and they take the risk.
Yeah.
But, you know, most people in life are not born to take the risk.
Yeah.
They want to go into business. They're interested to be their own boss. They're interested in the freedom. They're interested in the pleasure and the worry sometimes of running their own operation.
Yeah.
So they see franchising as the way to do it because they're working with somebody else's proven business model the franchisor is going to support them in a lot of different ways, and the package can be so different for each franchise depending on the nature of the franchisor.
Yeah.
The franchisor is going to continue with the R&D. They're going to have an eye on what's happening in the bigger marketplace. They're going to think about things like what happens if there's a Brexit or how do we cope with the living wage stuff.
Yeah.
That's what the franchisor does. And that's what the franchisee is paying for. They're paying for somebody to continue to develop, support the business and the business model and them. And they've got to be comfortable with the fact that actually they're using somebody else's IP, their intellectual property, their know-how, and they're having somebody from that business always on the end of the telephone there, willing and helping to support them, regular field visits from the business development team, conference, ability to share with other franchisees, being part of a family. The old thing in franchising is in business by yourself, but not alone.
Yeah.
And that's the point.
So I'm guessing that this would really suit a lot of people that I would term as intrapreneurs.
Yes, I think you would say that would be safe. That would be the description of the franchisee.
Yeah, I've
going
got it.
Going back to the franchisor, so we've touched on there needs to be a business that works. There needs to be profit.
Yeah.
It needs to be, number three, it needs to be a systemized or systemizable business.
Okay.
Now, a lot of people who want to franchise a business, quite frankly, are relatively small businesses. So they haven't necessarily gone through all this infrastructure stuff, but it will be a journey that they'll have to take.
Yeah.
Because they're about to set up a network business of franchisees following their business model, and it needs some system. But that's part of what we do. We help them to identify where they need to put these things in place and how to go about doing it.
So this is effectively creating the book on, you know, like McDonald's, flip the burger once, flip the burger again, put it in a bun, put lettuce on, then you put a tomato on, then you put the ketchup on, and you do it in a systemized manner. And
yeah.
I mean, obviously,
that's the process, Daniel, that works at the coalface.
Yeah.
If we take a McDonald's, and why not, because it's a great brand,
yeah.
Then you've got two things going on. You've got the flipping burgers bit, but you've then got the man behind the scenes who's running a business. So you've got two aspects to a franchisee. The franchisee is both an operations person and a business person.
Yeah.
And the franchisor has got to put both those skills into that franchisee, training them in, providing the manuals that they've then got available to them to use on a daily basis that become the Bible through which the franchisee develops the business. And in all of those things will be the systems.
Yeah.
You know, it's great to have a business that has got a really nice product. If you don't know what margin you're making and you don't know whether your wastage is too high and you don't know how to schedule your man hours and if you've got no idea how to market locally, then it isn't going to work as well as it could do.
I've got it. Okay. And I believe this is still correct to this day, but McDonald's were very clever in the way that they did it because they're pretty much the world's largest real estate owner because the product that McDonald's sell, although you may think it's burgers, they actually make their money from rents that the franchisee actually, you know, they rent the building from McDonald's, but it's packaged up as a McDonald's. I just think that's really, really clever in terms of how they've done that.
Yeah, I agree with you. You're widely read and you're correct in what you say. Not every franchisor wants to take responsibility for the lease, of course. That's an onerous situation because if a franchisee ceases trading for whatever reason, the franchisor is then on the hook to get somebody new into that place or they've got to run it themselves.
Yeah.
So, you know, it is a strategy, but it's one that needs to be pretty carefully thought through.
I agree. That's a really interesting differentiation. It's one that I'd never thought of about the, you know, if I owned a McDonald's, but I actually rented the building, the lease for a 15-year lease, when McDonald's went bust in year three, I've still got another 12 years to do something with this building, and then that would make me go bust, despite having, you know, none of my fault, effectively. So,
you're taking that from the point of view of the franchisee.
Yeah.
That's interesting. If you're happy with this conversation, ping around a bit. Mm. The great thing, why do people get involved in franchising as a franchisor or a franchisee? Answer, they want to grow a successful business. What's the success rate look like? The answer is jolly good. There is a much higher ongoing success rate from franchise businesses than there is from startups out in the wider world. That's why the banks have always been willing to lend money to franchisors and their franchisees.
Got it.
Because they know that the risk element to the bank is a lot less. In fact, I was at a forum yesterday of franchise advisors under the British Franchise Association, and Mark Scott, who's head of the NatWest RBS franchise team there, said that they've not had a single failure financially this year of either franchisor or franchisee.
Wow, that's phenomenal.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good thing.
I do. Look at small businesses failing this year, because we're just, just come out of double dip recession. Some people think we might still be there. And some, other people think what recession, because the business have taken off. But the numbers of businesses failing in 2016, significant, I would say.
I don't have the stats, so I couldn't comment. But I do know that each year NatWest and the BFA run a survey on the health of franchising in many different ways. And they've been doing this for a lot of years now, so they've got some really good statistical evidence, empirical evidence. The industry grows year on year. The failure rate is extremely small. All the major banks love it. They're all in there with their own specialist franchise departments. Mm. It says that franchising works.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it exciting for people who want to grow their own business through franchising. If they do this thing properly, if they take time to get it right, it can be a great way to expand their own business model. But as I say, their business model has got to be profitable, reputable, sustainable. There's an interesting word, sustainable. 3 years ago on every high street, you could go into a shop where they'd have a tank full of fish that would nibble the dead skin. Remember
those? Yeah, I do.
Yeah, tell me how many there are today.
I think they've all been banned, haven't they, due to health and safety concerns?
Well, there were, yes, but it's a bit far-fetched as to whether there really was. I think it was a health thing, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But it didn't sustain itself. We had an outburst of juice bars back in the 2007-2008 period. Have they really taken off in the way and been sustainable in the way that was envisaged at that time?
Yeah.
Sadly, as it turns out, not so. There are a couple of good names around, but the market itself hasn't expanded out in the way that people expected it to do.
So interestingly, on that, Nick, I used to work at LaserQuest many, many years ago.
Oh, yes.
20 years ago. And I loved working at LaserQuest. You get to shoot your boss every day. I mean, it's more enjoyable than that, basically. And I enjoyed it, but it was a bit of a fad. And LaserQuest still exists. And so I drove past a Quasar, which was even older, a couple of weeks ago. And I was like, oh my gosh, a Quasar. I can't believe that still exists. And so what's sort of striking me right now is that there are two types of franchises. So there's the faddy type of franchises, which is a new fandangle thing, which will take off and have will shine brightly, but only for a short period of time. And then there are other types of franchises, which like McDonald's and possibly Subway. But interestingly, those type of franchises are ones where you get lots and lots of repeat business because it's food. So is that fair to say, do you think?
That's another conversation. yes, of course they work. Those are working because they've got the right price point. They've got great marketing. They've been around for years. The public have bought into them, but they continue to have to refresh themselves. You look at the way in which McDonald's has had to move its menu in the last 5 years and is continuing to innovate in order to stay attractive, because repeat business can't be taken for granted. You've always got to be working on the model. The thing about Quasar, there's an interesting, they've been around for a long time, but it's a successful offer that kids enjoy. They still like to go in and have fun doing stuff. Parents are happy for them to do it. The guns still work. The debts can be redeveloped. So, hey, that's not a bad business. I think it is harder, of course, to have a franchise business where the franchisee has constantly got to churn his customer base in order to stay effective. That's true of any business, isn't it? What you want to do is build up a reliable reputation in the marketplace so that you get people coming back again and again. Not necessarily everyday purchase. Subway, you know, pretty much 5 days a week, somebody might eat a Subway.
Yeah.
But there may be other businesses where there is a need for the service once a month. Take the grass treatment businesses, for example. You typically would have your grass treated four times a year, spring, summer, autumn, winter. It might be scarified, it might be deep tine drilled and all that stuff. There are franchises that work on that basis, but what you have to then do is build a larger portfolio area. And here's another one, paints. You think about brands like Chips Away.
Yeah.
The Chips Away franchisee typically will want to build up connections with dealerships, car dealerships, so that they get repeat business, different cars, same dealership. As well as that, they'll do private work, but, you know, unless you're terribly bad driving, you're not going to be getting Chips Away chat round every 5 minutes, are you?
No, I agree. So the other question I've got for you then, because in my mind, so, like, the podcast is called Business, Property and Wealth Creation. Okay, so we cover two of the three there, although I'm sure you get, well, you do with real estate and, you know, property and so on, you get franchise businesses. But on business and wealth creation, now they're two separate items, you see. So business for me means you're much more hands-on and you can buy into some franchises where you are very, very hands-on, like Chips Away. You're literally driving your own vehicle around, getting rid of people's dents in cars. But then there's a second type as well, which really refers to wealth creation, which is where you're not working in the business, but you just own the business. So can you just talk to me a little bit about those two types of concepts? So that, like, for where I am now...
What you've articulated is, in the former situation, a job franchise.
Yes.
Man, very straightforwardly, really earning his crust, building up a little bit of value in the business to the point when he wishes to move on. And then resell the business, and one hopes that he'll have built some endowment benefit and will make a bit of cash. But there is more to be had if you have a management franchise where the franchisee, starting in his greenfield area, for example, is probably going to be on the tools, but the objective is to quickly build a business whereby he is managing the process of marketing, administration, staff, and all that other stuff.
Yeah.
And as a team of people that go out and deliver, because he's then got more value in his business. And we're talking here, Daniel, from the point of view of being a franchisee. Don't forget there's also wealth creation for the franchisor.
Yeah.
The thing for the franchise, why does a person franchise his business out? Answer is because he's got a great idea, something's going well, he wants to expand, and he's got three ways in which to expand. Number one, generically, which involves his own capital, hiring people, being responsible, taking on the challenge of a workforce over an extended area. And anyone who's got that challenge knows that it can be difficult. Number two option, if he doesn't have a lot of cash to expand the business, he may need to go to an investor. If you go to an investor, you therefore lose some control over the business, and ultimately you don't get the same value from it when you resell because the investor will have had a good chunk of that. The third opportunity, of course, is to go to franchising and to say, okay, I'm going to replicate my business through entrepreneurially minded people who will follow my system, as you described, entrepreneurs, who will follow my system, build their own business. They will pay me for the rights. I will build up a brand that's got brand recognition nationwide, and ultimately I will move on. And there are a lot of good examples of businesses that have done just that in the UK, where the founder has exited for a good amount of money, either to a trade sale or to existing management. And he has had the fun of growing the business. He's had the revenue stream that comes from the business to the point at which he wishes to sell, and then he's had the capital gain. Now, that's what I think I call wealth creation.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. So just talk to me about some costs then. If I was a business owner, let's just use the example of the lettings agency. I sold the lettings agency, by the way, back in 2011, maybe, I can't remember when, something like that. So what are the costs to franchise a business such as that? And then what are the timescales to create the next copycat of a first franchisee, if you like?
Okay, let's imagine then the business has been trading successfully for a period of time. You've got some proven methodology. You've got more than one location trading? Because that's the first question, is can we replicate it?
Yeah.
It might have been great with your personality, but if you put a manager in another office, can he actually do what you
do? Of course, yeah.
So if you can teach him to do that, terrific. Right, costs depends. So much depends, this. It's like me saying to you, give me a price to paint my house, Daniel.
Yeah.
You haven't seen it, but I want a price.
Yeah, of course.
I'm not really sure.
Yeah.
It could be from here to there. Maximum, you could incur anything to 30K to get ready to launch, and then you'll need some marketing budget. But of course, the whole thing can be done for less if you are the sort of entrepreneur who wants us to work alongside you, giving you some direction, with you taking more responsibility for certain aspects, for example, the writing of manuals or the putting together of the training program and so forth. Some busy people want to completely outsource to consultancy, some want the consultancy working alongside them. Either way, great for us.
So it's interesting, because that 30K, for example, on one hand, it seems like a lot of money. But then on the other hand, when you talk about return on investments, depends what you're going to sell your franchise solution for. So, you know, what's the average price? Or, I mean, again, it's how long's a piece of string. But give me an example of...
Let's just go back, can I?
Yeah.
Two questions. So price we just touched on. I'll come back to that bit. The other thing was you said time scale.
Yeah.
Typically, from first meet through to being ready to launch, you know, anything much less than 6 months would be a challenge, because most people are still running their day business while they're setting up the new business.
Okay.
Now, what are you selling the franchise for? The reality is you're not looking to make profit specifically on selling the franchise.
Yeah.
That's where I think you'll find some not especially good franchises, where the franchisor is not interested in supporting his franchisees, but simply taking some upfront money.
Yeah.
I don't feel that's a genuine example of good franchising.
I've got a friend of mine who actually bought into a franchise, and it was web development, and that's exactly what happened. He put like 20, 25 grand in, and then 18 months later, it all disappeared, zero support, and literally they were just making money off that 25 grand.
Yeah, yes, somebody had him over, I'm afraid.
Yeah.
A good franchisor is going to recover the costs of bringing that franchisee on board, and by that I mean the recruitment process, because marketing has to take place, so you've got some element there. Of course, you've got to train them, you've got to deliver the hard deliverables. There's a value in the intellectual property, but ultimately there will be a price point at which that franchise is put into the market. The franchisee has got to be capable of amortizing that over the life of the franchise agreement, which typically is 5 years, as well as being able to see a living coming from that business. So if you make the price point too high, depending on the nature of the business, there won't be enough fat on the bone for the franchisee, so he won't come on board, because he'll see the numbers and work it out. The real value to a franchisor is not the upfront fee, but it is the ongoing management service fee, the regular income from his franchise network. And for some, that might be because the franchisor is supplying some product or a particular added service through the franchisee. For others, it will be that they're simply taking a management service fee, which is a percentage of the franchisee's top-line turnover.
Got it. Perfect. One quick question. I quite enjoy bouncing around, as you put it earlier, anyway, because it's just, you know, life isn't a straight line anyways, let's face it. So can you give me an example? So, for example, let's say I'm an investor. I've got some money that I want to invest. Let's just say 50 grand for now. And I want to buy a franchise, but I want to be hands off. I don't want to actually go and do, I don't want to be making sandwiches, for example, but I want to recruit a team to who will actually go and make the sandwiches. Can you give me an example of a business like that, that I can just chuck some money at and maybe hire a manager who would go through all the training? Can you give me an example of a business like that and what that might cost?
I'm going to challenge you.
Okay.
You're a businessman, right?
I've been called many things, but yes.
Yeah, you're a businessman, and you are the franchisor.
Mm.
Now, what do you want from your franchisee?
As a franchisor, well, from a franchisee, I want commitment. I guess that's the number one thing, isn't it?
Yes.
That they're actually going to go and do what they need to do to make that franchise successful. Otherwise, it looks bad.
Right. Now then, if your investor is purely a person who's buying that business, sticking a manager in and not paying much attention to it, do you as the franchisor feel that you've got the right person to award your franchise to in a particular town, let's say Leeds, which is where you're from,
yeah.
Because you've given the person the rights to develop that business in Leeds. If they're not committed to it, is it going to go as well as you want it to go?
No, no, it's got a much higher probability of failing, hasn't it?
It has a probability of failing. Most franchisors really do want their franchisee to be involved.
Got it, okay.
It's only when you get to the big ticket franchises, and typically those are the significant food brands, that you know very well it will only work if there is a team. There often needs to be an ops manager or ops director, call him whatever you want.
And that needs to be like a career manager as well, not just somebody who's picked up a job for, you know, for a temporary duration.
Exactly right. This person wants to be somebody who's actually committed, and as a franchisor, I'd want to know they've got some skin in the game.
Yeah. What's the cost, by the way, of, I don't know, Subway, McDonald's, you know, one of the big chains, approximately?
No, there's the one. my colleague's smiling because he's just... how much money have you got, he says. I would say that if you look at a Subway, you can open a Subway for something around 150-200k.
Okay.
Subway really like to have people who are prepared to open a number of locations,
yeah,
under what's called a development agreement over a period of time.
Yeah.
Single unit franchising, and you know how many Subways there are in the UK already, yeah. You know how many there are around the world. It's the biggest franchise in terms of locations globally.
Wow. Didn't know that. I thought it would be McDonald's for some reason.
No, it's not. It's Subway. Subway overtook McDonald's going back a bit now.
Yeah.
But the reality is that as a franchisor, you really want to work, you can, with people who are multiple unit operators.
Yeah.
Because it makes your life a lot easier, because you've got somebody out there whom you can trust who's actually building and managing this little network. So Subway franchisees often have 3, 4, or 5 locations.
And they then actually get more skin in the game anyway, because then they are getting a bigger form of commitment rather than just somebody who just wants to be completely hands-off, because they are likely to be much more hands-on in just growing the business.
Yeah. Going back to your investment thing, by the way, I should have said, investment franchises, the sort that you will see that we would call an investment franchise, are in the hotel sector.
Okay. Interesting.
That's probably not the people that we're talking to in this podcast.
Yeah, I've got it. Okay. So, I mean, we get all sorts of different people listening to the podcast, literally from housewives to people running multi-million pound businesses to people buying properties every week, all sorts of different stuff. And what I found in the podcast is not to generalise about who the listener is, because honestly, we get all sorts of people, which is really interesting. So a lot of people that do listen are people that are looking for that hands-off investment, that next big thing. Property's been and gone to some extent because the changes in the tax, you know, the stamp duty changes come through with an additional 3% on second properties, and you're no longer able to offset all of the interest despite other businesses being able to do it. As a property business, you're not enabled to do that, which actually... Some people means that the boat has left for property. I actually think the opposite, because landlords are coming out and, you know, in the UK in the next sort of 10 years, an additional 4 million people are coming into the country. Well, they have to be housed somewhere. So rents are going up, property prices are going up, so it'll cover it. But we're finding a lot of people looking at different types of investments and wondering now where to put their money. Some people are going to America, for example, and just buying properties outright for cash for like 40, 50 grand, getting great yields on those. And so that's why I'm asking that type of specific question, you know?
Yeah. I'm stepping back from that question, because I don't see franchising as an investment in the way that people see property.
I agree, yeah. No, it's a lot more hands-on, and it should be hands-on, because it's a growing, living entity that needs a lot of attention to grow. Otherwise, it dies, I imagine.
Yeah, perfectly true.
Got it. Okay, so let's say then I'm a business owner. I want to franchise my business. I know that you exist. What's the first step for me if I want to franchise my business with you?
Pick the phone up. We'll say hello. We'll meet up face-to-face after some initial discussion on the phone, make sure it does make sense for both parties. And we'll sit down for an hour together, no cost, to talk about the journey, what it looks like, what the franchisor wants to achieve in their life, I'm a great fan of Stephen Covey and his Seven Habits.
Yeah.
And I really think the old start with the end in mind is a crucial piece.
Mm.
For some people, they're looking to build their franchise network up over a long period of time. Others have got a faster track where they've got certain objectives that they want to achieve. So the first conversation is around getting to know the entrepreneur, the person who wants to franchise his business. Does he feel comfortable with us? Do we feel comfortable with him? Ask him some of these questions that we've just been running through in the podcast. Get to know a bit about his business system, what sector he's in, how he operates, and be able to tailor a franchise development plan to him to suit what he's looking for.
I've got it.
You know, as a consultancy in business, we've learned pretty much that we know a lot of stuff, but actually it's only what's relevant to the other party that we should be talking about.
Yeah. So it's interesting as well, because I know a lot of people listen and they go, well, I'd like to franchise my business, and they end up not picking up the phone. Whereas actually, you know, nothing ever got started by not picking up the phone, sort of thing. And just having that initial conversation can answer a lot of their questions by, you know, is it actually going to work for them or is it not? And nothing's guaranteed. But unless we actually pick up the phone and speak to you, then they'll never know that the answer to that question.
You're absolutely right there. And, you know, we like speaking to people. Speaking to people starts the journey, gives them some inspiration. Confucius said the longest journey started with a single step?
Yeah. A journey of 1,000 miles starts with a single step, I think.
Yep, you've got it.
I think he also said it's not the mountain you have to climb, but the pebble in your shoe. So what are the mistakes that most people make? So from a franchisor perspective, let's say I own the letting agency and I think, right, I want to franchise it. I've not had a conversation with you yet. What are the sort of mistakes that most people are likely to make?
That's a great question. First question is to think they can do it without help. Secondly, to try and recruit too many franchisees too quickly.
Yeah.
Third, not to support them when they have got them on board.
Yeah.
Franchising is not a fast business. If you wanted to just draw a little graph, a little curve here, year one over to year five, it's a steady line. It's not a vertical expansion.
Yeah.
So in your first year, you want to get 2, 3, 4 potential franchisees, pilot franchisees on board, work with them, learn what it's like to be a franchisor, help them to get successful, embed them, make them talk really well about you because you've delivered on your promise. Your business is good, your support is good. When you've done that, then you can start to expand the number of franchisees. But if you go too fast and you recruit some and you've barely got them trading before you want to bring in the next wave, and then you do that game, you cannot, unless you're a reasonably sized business, you cannot support the people adequately. So that's the biggest mistake I think that people make. They want to grow too quickly.
Interestingly, one of the other mistakes that I can think about is that they've got a business that's not as profitable as it should be. And so they think, oh, I know what I'll do. Economies of scale. Once we get 5 more locations, then it'll start making profit. And I speak to a lot of people like that. I'm like, dude, you need to just hang on and make your business work first before you start getting other people involved in your failure. I can see that happening quite often, you know, through people I speak to at networking events and that sort of thing. Would you agree with that?
I would agree. If you're using franchising as a get-out-of-jail card, then you're going to end up ripping people off.
Yeah, yeah.
Now, that, unfortunately, that happens.
Mm.
We are not. We as a reputable business in franchise consulting won't be a party to that. I really just want to talk to people who've got a good business, who want to help others succeed, and through their success, they will succeed. This franchising really is a win-win approach.
Yeah.
Going back, reasons why you might make mistakes. Choosing the wrong franchisee. Just because somebody's in front of you with a willing smile, nice personality, and a check doesn't mean they're right for business.
I agree. That's the same when I take on coaching clients as well. If, you know, just because, and I've seen people qualify clients by, can you afford it? Yeah, right, well, go on in. And it's like, that's crazy. Why would you run a business like that?
Well, it happens. Going right back to the start of our conversation, I said something there about you cannot franchise an idea.
Mm.
Now, unfortunately, people do make mistakes sometimes of thinking they can franchise an idea.
So this is without a proven concept, effectively.
Yeah, why would you, as a person wanting to buy a franchise, in other words, a franchisee, why would you spend money on a franchise from a company that hasn't yet proved that it works?
Yeah, I agree.
You as their guinea pig.
Yeah.
And, sometimes.
And for that, you need financials in place as well, I'm assuming, so that you can see how much, you know, that yes. lead location takes, and you've physically got, because I've seen people talk about going into franchises without even seeing the numbers. Well, how do you know how much money they're making?
There's a reality that some people do buy franchises without doing sufficient due diligence.
Yeah.
Now, you could say caveat emptor, but actually, the people who sell franchises without having consideration of the person who buys them deserve all they get when they're taken to court.
Yeah, I agree. So what protection does the BFA, the British Franchise Association, give? Like, obviously, I'm assuming you'd recommend if you're going to buy a franchise, you buy it through the BFA or one that's regulated by them.
Let's just describe what the BFA is and does.
Yeah.
It is not a legal regulator.
Yeah.
There is no regulatory environment in this country for franchising.
Okay.
But normal trading law, competition law, and anything else related to the particular sector that the franchisor is in.
Yeah.
The BFA is the guardian of good practice in franchising.
Okay.
And probably 30% of the brands that actively sell franchises in the UK are affiliated members of the BFA. The BFA will make sure that the franchisor has a proven business, will make sure that their legal agreement is fair, that their recruitment documents are reflective of the business, that the franchisor has manuals that are in place to enable the franchisee to operate the business having had their training.
Yeah.
What they don't do is do ongoing detailed monitoring and financial investigation into franchisors. The BFA helps and educates both franchisors and potential franchisees about how to be a good practitioner, I think that's fair to say. They oversee the four franchise exhibitions that take place in the UK. They help to expand the awareness of the marketplace generally for franchising.
Perfect. Interestingly, you see, I always think that life is about probabilities. So if you want success and you want to increase the probability of success, then you get, for example, a coach. That's not a guarantee that you'll get success, but it's increasing probability. If you want to get dating, then going out on match.com will increase your probability of getting a date rather than not being on it. And going through the BFA will increase your probability of having a successful franchise experience, but it's not a guarantee of a successful, it's always about probabilities, isn't it?
Yeah, no, I think that's a nice way of looking at it.
Okay, perfect. So if people want to reach out to you, Nick, what's the best way for them to do that?
Three ways. 01603 703 254.
Yeah.
Or look at our website, which is all the W's, astonsfranchise.com, or email me, n.williams@astonsfranchise.com.
That's awesome. And what I'm going to do is I'll send you, if you can just drop me an email with those contact details on, I'll embed them into the podcast. So if you're listening to this on iTunes, you can just get the details from there. And then hopefully the link, you should just be able to click the link and you'll be able to send an email straight away. And Nick, that's wonderful. We've covered an awful lot in such a short space of time. We've been going 40 minutes and we've covered absolutely tons. But I think we've given enough information so that if you've either got a business that you're looking at franchising out, that you actually know what the next step is and what the further steps are likely to be and some pitfalls to watch out for. And also if you're looking to buy into a franchise, the sort of things that you need to be looking at. But also, you know, if you're looking to buy into a franchise, then Nick's also your man. It's not just about selling franchises as well. Is that correct?
Yes, indeed.
Awesome. Well, Nick, I'd just like to say thank you very much for taking time out of your very busy schedule. I can hear the guy in the background making calls and so on. It's wonderful. I could tell you're really busy. But taking that time out to spend 40 minutes with us, I would just really appreciate that. And thank you for coming on the podcast.
Thank you. I've enjoyed it. Thanks. Good questions from you, Daniel. I hope this is useful to people. And as I've said, I'm always happy to have a conversation. That's what we like to do.
That's perfect. Thank you, Nick. Take care.
Thanks for that.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
The Property Coaching and Wealth Creation Podcast, brought to you by property and business coach Daniel Latto. Join the conversation at www.daniellatto.co.uk. Remember to like and subscribe.